We have a quorum with all members present.
Thank you. Who has the board goals for this meeting? Member Gaddis, can you please read the board goals?
Yes. Matanuskas, Susitna Borough School District, vision, mission, beliefs, values, goals, and objectives. Our vision, Mattsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Our mission, Mattsu Borough School District prepares students for success. Our beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and the best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Our core values, stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, lack of reprisal. Our goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. Annual objectives, accountability will be assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines.
Thank you. Jennifer, could you lead us in the pledge? This takes us down to item 2, approval of agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the agenda as written.
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Cordero. Is there any dissent? Agenda is approved. Executive session occurred previous to us, our start of the open meeting. This takes us down to item 4. This is persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I'm going to quickly read the guidelines. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard, or may be handled in executive session, or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room clear if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee to take the issue under advisement. It's a maximum of 1 hour per meeting. This first part, obviously, is the 30 minutes. Is there anyone that would like to come forward and speak before the board?
We have Mr. Dick. It starts with an H and it ends with an N. Okay.
My name is Dick Heron, and I'm from Wasilla. Been up here for about 30 or so years. I practice law there. And I'm here to talk about girls' high school hockey. I'm very, very proud. Before I start, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you. And also, I want to thank you for your service on the school board. I think I know it's a great sacrifice and appreciate all you do for kids. And that's the spirit that I'm here today, I think, I'd like to think, because I don't have a girl who plays high school hockey. But hockey parents, of which I am one, have a reputation of being sort of, well, I guess Sarah Palin characterized them as a pit bull with lipstick or something like that. But I want to congratulate the Mattsu School Borough, first of all, for Jordan Elkins. Jordan Elkins played high school hockey for the Wasilla Boys High School team. There she is in her uniform. She doesn't have the A that she wore that year. But this is her earlier this season, as she was captain for the Quinnipiac women's hockey team. Jordan's on her way down to Texas now, where she's going to be coaching girls hockey. I'd like to call your attention to the Sports Illustrated magazine that came out a few weeks ago. And I will be sending to each of you that article because it's a wonderful article. It talks about the benefits that are reaped by girls in sports, in team sports. It improves their scoring in engineering and sciences and math. And I think a good example of that is Jeannie Hebert-Truax, who taught my oldest boy, Wendell, upper-level math at Wasilla High School. Jeannie is in the she's in the High School Hall of Fame. She's won the last two state girls basketball championships. And if you go on the Wasilla girls basketball website, you will see just one awesome player contract. She's an example to everybody who teaches kids through athletics. I don't know where my time is, but oh, one other thing. I will say this. There's a great inequity in girls' hockey. I've been a hockey parent at Wasilla High for 5 years. My son Wendell plays hockey now at St. John's University on their JV team. He didn't go to juniors after school. My youngest son of three is Russell. He's in seventh grade. He will play hockey at Wasilla High School. And my middle boy, William, will be a senior at Wasilla next year. Now, there's great opportunities for girls outside after high school. Locally, we had Carrie Weiland, who won a silver medal at the last World Olympic Games down in Vancouver. Carrie played professional hockey in Canada, where she now lives in Toronto. Out at Kenny Lake, a gal.
I think that was their way of saying you got to wrap it up.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to give you folks a heads up. We started a booster club for the girls' hockey program at Wasilla High School, and we will be communicating with you as the summer moves on, and hopefully next year the Valley will host the first ever state girls' high school hockey tournament. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak before the board at this time? Seeing none, this takes us down to item 5, Borough and City Reports. Dr. Perama.
Mr. Dunleavy, we do have Wasilla here present.
I just want to compliment you on your building here. This is great. Maybe the borough will follow step. I have just one item before you tonight. It's just an ordinance that we're going to bring before the Wasilla City Council on Monday night, and that's ordinance number is 12-23. That's appropriating a 1 cent increase in our sales tax, with 50% of that sales tax go towards construction of projects over 100,000, and listed in the ballot when it comes on in October will be the libraries being number one. So just to kind of give you an update, I'll leave copies of that in the back if anybody wants a copy. So thank you for your support.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals that would like to report on any of the cities or boroughs? Seeing none, this takes us down to item 6, Superintendent Update. Dr. Perama.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to request that Ken Forrest come forward and be present at the podium to assist me in the Superintendent Update. Later on in this agenda, the board will be adopting the final resolution for the budget, which is exciting as we move into the next school year. I do have a PowerPoint for the audience to be able to follow, and it is in front of you as well on the flat screens. And Mr. Forrest is going to assist me. I wanted to include more than just the final numbers. I wanted to really talk about where we stand with our metrics, what's going to happen right now with the funds that we have, the teachers that we have on recall list, that if we do move into having more students, we'll be prepared, and we do have some teachers to call back, and teachers that will that don't have positions right now but have contracts. So just to give more information so that later when we do move to the budget agenda items, you'll have that information. So we'll just start. The metrics, and I'm not sure if we have a copy. It's a little small up there. You might want to turn around the board to see that a little better. But this is just to show you really from whence we've come. And it starts at 2008-2009 school year, and in those years we were quite healthy, and if you can recall, we did receive quite a bit of ARRA funding to help us in that nature. So about $8 million came over those years in ARRA monies that really assisted us with our PTR. So if you look at 2008-2009, you'll notice grades 9 through 12 was about 23.5 to 1. Just moving up into 2010, which was 2 years ago, it had jumped from that year to 2 years ago to 28.7. The current year in which we're now finishing is 2011-2012, which is the bottom set of brackets there. And you'll notice this year our operational funds provided for a metric of 31 to 1 in grades 9 through 12 and in grades K through 6, 26 to 1. There was also some adjustments in elementary specialists as well as administrative support. However, this year, with what we were able to do and move monies around, if you will, you'll notice some cutbacks at district-wide programs. We are actually moving into next year with slightly better PTR, and that is basically taking monies. We did receive monies from our delegation in Juneau that had helped us with some specialized programs. CTE also was improved, but we also moved about 8 positions from the district out into the schools. In taking a look at the staffing changes, they are positive numbers. If you take a look at the very final yellow bar in certified totals, there's actually going to be 24 additional positions. And that is due to increase, of course, in students. And if you take a look, we're having an increase of 6.56 classroom teachers, strictly for enrollment. Elementary specialists follow that metric with enrollment as well. But if you look at voc ed teachers, our first year of the vocational ed training, or the vocational ed multiplier, if you will, came in the form of additional funds where we built programs. We spent a lot of money at that time building the programs, buying the equipment. But now we can take these funds and have voc ed teachers, additional voc ed teachers, in those programs and move and kind of rearrange some money to be able to capitalize on staffing. Addition of a tag teacher, you can just go along, librarian, school nurse, special education teacher. I just want to clarify that you'll take a look at ELL teachers and advanced path. Those were just moved into other programs in the schools, so removed from advanced path into the schools. We had supplemented advanced path teacher with some core teachers in the high schools to get it off and running, and now we're running on model as the program has asked. So those teachers are now back into the classroom. Principals, if you will, when schools fell low on numbers, we did have several changes out in Sutton. They have been losing students, and primarily those students are choosing to come into the core area due to child care facilities and whatnot. But the principal there is now teaching more, and so the principal is a teacher principal. If you take a look at the classified totals, there isn't as large of a change, but you can see that there were changes within positions to more effectively get our school programs completed. This is the total staffing scenario for the district. And again, while the district employs about 2,400 people, these are the amount of full-time FTE in the operational funds. These are not grant-funded positions. Many of our special education, federal programs positions are grant-funded. These are, if you will, what we call the hard money positions that come from the state funding formula. And these are our total numbers. We have 1,057.35 certified staff that are funded through the operational monies by the base student allocation, as well as 429 classified. Again, you can add, and the difference between 2,400 employees is the difference in full-time equivalents, as well as we do receive many grant funds. Please take a look at the status of the classified staffing. This is a displaced list of classified staffing, and as you can see, they're special education assistants and tutor advisors. These positions, most of our special education assistant positions are funded out of 6B grant monies to assist, and some also do come out of the operational funds. But as you know, with special education, those funds follow the students. And so these assistants will be placed in a school as determined by the needs of students and their IEPs. So we don't attach just people to schools. We attach our staffing to students who need those services. So we do have 18.5 folks, or 19 people, if you will, 18.5 positions in which we are determining now where the IEP needs will fall, and then those staff will assume positions in those schools. They will be reassigned. The next is a list of certified, the status of the classified staffing, which are on a recall list. The majority of these positions did fall under grant funds in the 6B, as well as some Dazugi preschool, which we've had for several years, and some are from the general fund. But these positions, primarily, as you see, are grant-funded, and without the grants coming in, we won't have these positions. Last year, if you recall, the federal programs was decreased federal funding by 17%. This year, it's 8%. And special education and federal programs have a majority of assistance in schools that are funded via grants. When we do, we had some good news, as you saw on your board connect, that we did receive a preschool grant, so we will be able to hire back those at the bottom, but the information came at different times when we were preparing these. So we already have a plan for some of these folks to be reassigned now that the grants that we've applied for are coming in. Yes.
Dr. Bramo, so currently how many people are still, I guess, in the pending assignment?
I'm just sharing just getting to that. Okay, so you're thinking one step ahead of me. Here's the, so of these folks, the 22.55, these are classified people waiting to be assigned. The other folks we know we have positions for because they're in hard money, but these are really tied to grants. So if more grant monies do come in, we will reassign them. But again, this is classified. I'll move on to certified, or here's the status of classified staffing. We do have these reductions that we had made across the district. Very few solid reductions in the general fund, half of an admin secretary, but they were moved to other positions to capitalize on funding for other positions. Not very many reductions in classifying there. The certified staffing, right now, we have what's called a displaced list, and these are folks. These 6.5 positions are positions in which contracts were awarded because these folks are tenured. And so if you see, we have three elementary teachers. One is a physical education. And then, you know, we move on to secondary technology, English, social studies, and an English, Russian, German teacher. And so we will place these folks into schools. There are jobs for them. But currently, schools have positions open, and people are applying from all over the district. But rest assured, these displaced teachers are currently looking for a position that will match their skills and where they would like to work, and they will be placed in positions. On the bottom, we have a recall list, which is very similar to last year, and we have physical education teachers, and they have the single endorsement of physical education. There is one from FY11-12, and if you see the last three on that list really are still displaced from last year on that list, and there wasn't a position. My goal is to hopefully see that we build back up in students and we can add more courses. Many times when we looked last year, if you recall, we were like, why are there so many special education? And what we saw in schools, they would partner positions. So if they had a math teacher and an English teacher or something else that had a certification as well in PE, they chose the teacher that had more functions so that they could put the pieces of the puzzle together, if you will. So we are working on physical education and looking for positions. There is one open now. We are not allowing that school to hire. We are looking to place folks that have that already have worked in our district or are on the recall list. This is the vacancy information. As you can see, the vacancy is longer than the list of people who need to be placed, which is a good sign. These positions are currently open, and the 6.5 positions and 7 people that I had just talked about probably are applying for some of these positions, as well as their colleagues from around the district. Our negotiated agreement allows for teachers to really select the position that they would like and interview for it before they are involuntarily assigned to one of these positions. The closeout of those is August 1st, and after August 1st, the district will make those placements. But we really do try to match schools with programs, with kids and staff that want to work there. So they're currently open positions, and we have more open positions than we have, again, people on the recall list. There's other 4 vacancies that we have in addition to this that are not open right now. So page 10, which we just saw, are open positions being interviewed for currently. And we have these vacancies which have not opened yet, but we do know we have them. If you notice, one is the physical education teacher, because we will take one of our physical education teachers who is on the recall list or the displaced list and place them in that. I'm also an elementary teacher at Mockatons. That was a hold where we didn't hire because we just weren't sure where those students are going to land, if you will, after the boundary changes. And so the principal did not want to hire somebody and then come to find out that, you know, students really will move to a new school and then that teacher would have to move. So as soon as July boots up, the middle of July, and we start having online registration, the principal's going to assess those data and see if he should hire very quickly to get that position in. And so that's just really a summary. And if you have any questions of staffing, that kind of gives a picture. Ken Forrest will go deeper into the actual numbers and the questions that came up last meeting in regard to the budget. So anything on staffing, we can answer.
I do have a question. And this is something that I'm not too familiar with, but if a teacher, for example, is a high school teacher or a middle school teacher, and the only open position is an elementary position, I realize that they have to be certified to be able to teach that. Can they still get that job and teach while they're getting their certification, or is that something that they have to wait until they actually get proficient in that area?
Through the president, there's really a couple of answers to that. We want the most qualified person for the position. Generally, what happens is elementary really stay with elementary and secondary stay. But if I'm a secondary science teacher, and science teachers are very specific to actually the subject, so if I'm a certified science biology teacher, highly qualified in biology for secondary, I have a secondary certificate so I can teach in the secondary school, but I only have biology and they need a chemistry teacher. In that case, we can hire that teacher because they have the certification and work on the highly qualified area. But for the elementary certification itself and secondary, you need those certifications, but the quality or the areas in which they teach we can work with and have a plan to get them highly qualified. And we do that many, many times.
Member Larson.
On your, you have a displaced list of staff that are trying to get back in, and then you have vacancy list, and they want to interview for a position. Do they interview along with in-house people that want that position also?
Through the president, yes, because technically this displaced list are really in-house folks. They're in-house. There are tenured teachers that just are looking, may look for a different job, but there's many teachers in our district that may look for something new. So they're in that same boat. And as the slots are filled, if you will, we'll get to August 1st. Once August 1st happens, we will choose the jobs for the folks according to the negotiated agreement.
Okay. I guess the question would be they don't have preference over in-house. I mean, they all have to interview and then select it from that. Is that correct?
Correct. And technically they are in-house. They're in the district. And so it is an interview process like their peers, and that is actually set up in the negotiated agreement. That's a negotiated item, and all the staff who are qualified may apply, again, up until August 1st. With that, Mr. President, we will follow with the detail of the numbers, and I've requested Ken Forrest to assist, and actually Ken Forrest to take it from here and to be able to answer specific questions. Thank you.
Do you want to wait until the item is on the agenda, or would you want me to proceed? You have two items for vote later on in the agenda.
Let's wait to the items.
We have a bond project update.
Mr. Forrest, could you please speak to the second part, then, the bond update?
As the board may remember, we provided you with the capital projects update at the last meeting. There's been no significant change other than the borough is hard at work working on all those projects, and we're happy to report there's been significant progress on a lot of those projects. The status for this building, we have been notified that starting with the middle of July, we will be informed as to which sections of the building will be undergoing level one asbestos abatement. And so certain sections will be closed off for up to 2 weeks. We've requested that they do the hallway leading to the boardroom first, so that that can be mitigated, that it be done over a weekend, so that the access to this room remains. This room has new tile, is not subject to mitigation. So, and as you may recall, it had no tile in it before, so there's no hazard here. So that's the status. As soon as we get a schedule for this building, we will certainly let you know. The other projects are proceeding, and the next update from the borough will occur around the July 10th.
And I did take a visit to some schools today, and you will see turf on laid down at Colony High, as well as the field prepped for the work at Palmer High. And Mr. Forrest, can you comment specifically on the other buildings in the district that are having roof replacements and what they found out about the situation here?
Approximately eight other buildings are undergoing roof replacements, and luck of the draw, only the administration center tested positive for asbestos. All other buildings are clear.
Member Larson.
On the colony turf that went in, but not the track. Now, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, since they both didn't go in at the same time, that the turf will have to be rolled back next year in order to put the track in, which is more expensive than if they were both done at the same time. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. USKH, the architectural firm that will be handling both the track and the and is currently handling the turf at Colony High School, is estimating the remobilization and the additional work required will be approximately $50,000. Of additional cost. It could be less, it could be slightly more. That's their estimate. Obviously, Colony is a little bit ahead because the full amount for the turf and track is in the bond that the voters passed, and this turf is going in with a legislative grant. So there should be more than sufficient funds under the terms of the bond and even the borough ordinance. Those funds may be reallocated to ensure that the sports complexes at all of the high schools can share in the savings that resulted from this Colony turf being a legislative grant. So that will mean that additional ADA improvements, lighting, sound systems, bleacher repairs, et cetera, can be spread throughout the rest of the district.
Mr. President, one follow-up, please. And just why did and who made the decision to put I'm all for the turf going in, but why the turf and not the complex with the knowledge that it's going to cost another 50 grand to roll that turf back next year to do the whole system? Why not the whole system at once, and who made that decision?
It's my understanding it was a combination decision that the legislator, who was fairly adamant that the turf go in this summer, the borough was not prepared to attempt to do two tracks this summer. They chose to do Palmer due to the other extensive work that was going on there and the pre-engineering that was done. So parts of Palmer and all the rest of the sports complexes were sent out in a separate bid. As you may recall, the turf at Colony is being done by the boosters, and there's a lot of in-kind. So it was a decision by the borough project staff to allow that to proceed and not commingle the voter-approved bond funds with the legislative grant and the in-kind work being done by the boosters.
Any additional questions?
No, I've got other, but thank you for right now.
Thank you. This takes us down to item 7, consent agenda. Is there a motion to move the consent agenda?
I'd like to make a motion that we move the consent agenda.
I'll second that. And those are item A, 12-134, 1% for art approval. Oh, I'm sorry, minutes, January 6th, 2012. Item B, 12-153, the permission to apply expend Matsu Health Foundation Target Wellness Grant, and item C, 12-154, the certified new hires.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Gaddis. Is there any objection to pass this item? I'm sorry, Member Welton. Seeing none, consent agenda is passed. This takes us down to item 8, and before we do that, we're going to just take a quick 5-minute recess. This takes us down to item 8, action items. A-12-134, 1% for art approvals. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-134, 1% art approvals.
Second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Cordero. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item at this time? If so, please come forward and state your name for the record. Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, I'd just like to reiterate that these proposals were made by a committee of stakeholders, and they are for two mosaics at the two different schools, 100% approved, and folks would be happy to have those. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for members of the board? Any comments for members of the board? Seeing none, let's vote on this item. Member Larson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Member Gass?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And Member Cordero?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item B. 12-135, second reading, BP 9272, board member conduct. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-135, second reading, board policy 9272, board member conduct.
I'll second that.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. I'm going to turn this over to the committee if they have anything to add. And members of the board can ask questions. This is a continuation of the discussion that occurred at the last meeting. So with that.
I would like to make an amendment to the motion. And the amendment is to bring it up to the information that we received from Mr. Friedman. And that's. Just make sure I have the right one in front of me. 9272, Mr. Friedman's wording under D is emailing or texting by board members during meeting diverts attention from the board's business and may raise concerns with the attending public as to the propriety of such conduct. Therefore, all email texting devices must be turned off while such meetings are in session. An exception may be authorized by a board president pursuant to board policy 9320.
There's an amendment on the floor. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion seconded by Member Lacey. Are there questions of the committee by members of the board? Member Larson.
I'd like to make, I don't know if it's a friendly amendment or a suggestion. Since our school board attorney made a ruling which is 2.5 pages long, and this is not something that absolutely needs to pass this time, is there any possibility that we can postpone this with the wording in it for our next meeting, with the attorney's wording in it? In other words, go back to the committee, have the committee put the correct wording into it, and then vote on it next session, because it's not like a pressing issue. That's just a thought. And it takes more than one. We got three of them to go through.
Member Welton.
I believe, does our school board secretary have it already done?
Yeah.
I didn't get one.
Okay. We're going to just take a brief minute to make sure that everyone has the amendments in hand. We're back in session. Member Welton?
Yes. I didn't realize that these were here underneath all the other stuff I had. I apologize. I don't know what the process is, because our first reading was not of this content. And so tonight I gave it as an amendment because I didn't know that it had been completely filled out. I mean, I thought it had, but I wasn't sure. So I'm not sure of the process, because I think we would need another second reading unless we can do the amendment.
Member Cordero.
There was an additional email from the attorney after additional questions were asked, and this happened after he had proposed a different draft. And so I would like to point out that it addresses the question that I brought up at the last meeting, in which he says, and I quote, "The use of electronic devices for the purpose expressed by, in this case, me, such as calendaring, are not comparable to those texting, emailing, phone call concerns. Also, accommodating the need for immediate access to family and others in the event of emergencies and other pressing situations is well understood and accepted." And so I do want to put that out there so that it gets taken into consideration.
In light of the additional information that has come to the board very recently, would the Member Welton, since you've introduced an amendment, would you be open to withdrawing the item and withdrawing the policy items and to be placed on the next meeting so that it is vetted by the board and by the public?
I'd be willing to entertain that we postpone to time certain.
Which would be the next meeting?
And are we considering the next meeting to be in August?
Unless we have one before, then it would be August 1st.
I would ask that the other committee member be also asked. I believe that it's postponed to time certain would be appropriate, and I would make that motion if there is a second.
Second.
A motion made to postpone the action on the items regarding the board conduct until the August 1st meeting in order to give the board and public time to review the changes that have come to the board recently. There's a second by Member Larson. Any other discussion? Member Welton?
I think we need to there are three action items, and they would each have to be brought up and postponed separately.
Okay. So in this particular item, so I'll read it into the record. This is, item B12-135, second reading, BP9272, board conduct. There's a motion on the floor to postpone action on this item until the August 1st meeting in order to give both the public and the board appropriate time to review the items. Motion made by Member Welton, seconded by Member Larson. Is there any questions for the committee at this point? Any comments? Seeing none, let's take a vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
No.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. So the motion passes. This will be taken off the agenda, reinserted in the August 1st meeting with the information that was just received today by the board. This takes us down to item C, 12-136, second reading, BP 9320, meetings. Is there a motion to move this item to the floor? Go ahead.
I move to postpone this item to the next board meeting, which is August 1st.
There's a motion to postpone the item to the next board meeting, which is August 1st. Is there a second?
Second, yes.
Motion made by Member Welton, seconded by Member Larson. Is there any questions of the committee? Any comments? Let's vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
No.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. This takes us down to item D, 12-137, second reading, BP 9321, executive session. Is there a motion on this item?
I'll make a motion to postpone this item, the second reading of BP 9321, until time certain, August 1st meeting.
Motion made by Member Welton to postpone this item until the August 1st meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Member Larson. Are there any questions of the committee? Any comments? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
No.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. So motion passes. These three items will come up August 1st. This takes us down to item E, 12-138, high school calendar. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion to move this item, item number 12-138, high school draft calendar, FY13.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Motion made by Member Powger, seconded by Member Lacey. Items on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Thank you, Mr. President. Just in review, this item was brought forward as a suggestion to recapture class time at the high school levels 9 through 12. Just as a note, at the high school level, the standards-based assessment is only given in grades 9 and 10, and additional class time is lost during those assessments for grades 11 through 12, as at no time can curriculum be moved forward on those days. And so that's just something else to think about, whereas that is not the same for elementary and middle schools. But because 11th and 12th graders are not in class during those times that the assessment is given, there is an additional loss at high school. But this was a suggestion from the seven-period day task force as a possibility requested by the teachers to regain some class time. It's an addition of 2 days, which would remain in-service days from K through 8, but be school days for grades 9 through 12. Thank you.
Question from members of the board for staff. Comments? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us to item F, 12-139, resolution 12-017, idle free zone on district property. Is there a motion to move this item?
I would like to move this item, 12-017, idling on school property.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, Mr. Forrest and Mr. Remick are available for questioning if needed and as needed. Thank you.
Yeah, are there any questions of staff from our board? Member Larson.
This is in the form of a resolution. Does it, if it passes tonight, does it go into a policy?
Yes, it would.
And in that policy, the discussions from last meeting, as well as any other issues, will be part of that. Is that correct?
Those will be addressed. Yes.
And I assume then that draft policy will come as a first read sometime when it's completed.
Yes, it will.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions from the board? I have a question. Who's going to enforce the resolution that could eventually evolve into a policy? Who will enforce that on the school grounds?
We're going to attempt to do this through the educational procedure, where people are informed with some flyers, informational flyers at the schools, also on the website, and hopefully people will self-police. And this is the approach we want to take. We don't want to be real heavy-handed with it. We just want people to understand the hazards of idling in front of a school where the students and staff are breathing in those fumes.
So if somebody does not want to turn off their car for whatever reason, there is no penalty or there's no enforcement other than somebody in a neighboring car coming up and knocking on their window saying there's a sign that says turn off your car.
This is true. We haven't addressed whether or not we're going to have staff participate in maybe helping enforce this. I don't want to put anybody in an uncomfortable position with irate parents. I understand some people don't want to turn their car off because it does get cold out. Part of what we're looking at when we set up the policy is going to be, like we talked about, there's no students allowed on the playground because of inclement weather. Idling will be allowed on those days.
Any additional questions? Member Larson?
I know we'll review the policy, but one question you said that it's more of a self enforcement. Will that be noted in the policy itself, that's the kind of enforcement that will happen?
Yes, we're hoping that people understand the hazards and want to protect the students' and staff's health as well as their own.
Member Gaddis.
Is it safe to say that what we're doing is just a general education and then we're policing ourselves, i.e. the buses and the teachers? I can remember idling, waiting for an older kid while I've got a smaller kid in the car seat, and I would have had a tough time when it's very, very cold, somebody knocking on the window, walk a mile in my shoes type of a thing. So, I mean, I can see both sides of it, but is this generally for our use and just try to get education out there? But the enforcement part is where I guess I have an issue with.
I can understand your concerns about the enforcement part. I think our biggest push is going to be the educational procedure to try and let people know the hazards of idling and the effects, ill effects it can have on people. And, of course, the cost, right?
Any other questions from members of the board? Any comments from members of the board? Member Lacey.
I just want to thank you guys for having the foresight to come up with this. And when I'm on school grounds, I will enforce it.
Any other comments from members of the board? I have a comment. I think it's a great idea that really can't be enforced. And I think as a former teacher and principal, it's going to fall on the staff to do this, or it will fall on volunteers or self-deputized individuals that take it into their own hands. And it's going to be one of those things where it's in limbo. In other words, it's not really an infraction. It's infraction education. And I think we have literally thousands of these good ideas floating around that really aren't enforced or can be enforced. It's the only comment I have. Thanks. comment, Mr. Larson.
Yes, it is a comment. And my comment is I hope that the policy isn't written where we enforce, like we're talking about, enforcing this, because there's many a time I'm in front of an elementary school with an infant and a grandchild waiting to pick up another one, and if you come banging at my door and tell me to turn the car off, I'm going to give you the infant to keep warm, I guess. And what I like the idea of educational type thing, but I think there's if we throw enforcement out there, I believe we're going to create an issue that we don't need to deal with. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from members of the board? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Gaddis.
Yes.
Member Powger.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Cordero.
Yes.
I vote no. Motion passes. This takes us down to item G, 12-140, resolution 12-018, local business consideration. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion to move resolution 12-140.
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Gaddis, seconded by Member Cordero. Motion's on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Thank you, Mr. President. Please note that in the title of the resolution, there was a request to also include the Matanuska Susitna Borough in addition with the school district, and that correction was made. Thank you. That was the original intent, and we hadn't included it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for members of the board? Member Welton.
We have in our policy that we are supposed to use local as much as we can. Do we not?
Mr. Forrest, can you please come forward as the chief business officer, please?
Both the borough and the school district have a local preference in administrative procedure. I don't know that it's in board policy, but our procedures are to consider local first.
Member Gaddis.
And I just wanted to make a comment as the person bringing this forward is to remind our citizens, even though the administration has a policy, but we also do a lot of buying through our booster clubs, through our proms, and so on and so forth. And I wanted to make sure that we reiterated that we buy local. So that was one of the reasons to put this forward.
Question, Member Larson, or comment?
This resolution, will it change the policy in any form? Is it going to tweak the policy if this resolution passes, or is it just a resolution to remind people that we're going to do this?
Mr. Forrest.
We certainly can, as in the case of the no idle, we can come back and revise the board policy to formalize it. There are certain restrictions with regard to state procurement. So we'll run this by the attorneys so that we don't get crossways on what the state procurement code requires. But there are certain provisions, because I have semi-investigated this, which would allow us to put in preference statements, not necessarily preference points.
Any additional questions for members of the board? Any comments? Thank you. So let us vote on this item. Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Gaddis.
Yes.
Member Powger.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Cordero.
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item H. 12-141, new courses, career and technical. And I do believe that there are a number of curriculum-related items that administration would like to group in terms of questions and discussion.
Thank you, Mr. President. For items H, I, J, K, L, M, they all reference curriculum, and I would request these be addressed together in so much as the administration report. I've requested the Director of Career and Technical Education, Mr. Ray DePriest, to be available, the Assistant Superintendent for Instruction, Mr. Gene Stone, the Executive Director of Instruction, Mr. Mike Verbalo, and the curriculum coordinator, Ms. Becky Murphy, to be present for any questions as necessary, and they will come forward. But without that, we will not have a specific administrative report. Thank you.
So what we'll do is we're going to go to item H. We're going to ask it to be moved to the floor. Is there a motion to move item H?
I would like to move item H, 12-141, New School Courses, Career and Tech.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Cordero. Motion is on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item at this point? Seeing none, we have staff available for questions from the board. Are there any questions from members of the board for staff on this particular item, item H? Member Larson.
My understanding is we're going to visit some of these new courses in our retreats, such as the ROTC, because the courses that are presented to us, I don't know how that works within that curriculum. Is it true that we're going to then address most of that in the board retreat next week?
Yeah, Member Olson. Larson, excuse me.
It's better than Mrs. Larson.
In the board retreat, our main focus for those is really to look at those legislative appropriations. These that are coming forward, Mr. DePriest, these are a number of CTE courses that are we just are ready to move forward. They've already been gone through the curriculum process, through the curriculum council. And so we won't be addressing course by course at the retreat.
But we will address the ROTC at the retreat.
The ROTC,
but not
yes.
The remainder of the courses.
One follow-up question. I guess, there's a certification at the end if you go through, like, the ROTC, I assume, and that's what these courses all amount to. Is that and same with career and tech? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll let Mr. DePriest talk to that, but essentially, yes, there's certifications that are attached to those career tech courses.
The five courses, Air Force History, freshman level, Air Force Science, 10th grade. There's Air Force Space, which is 11th grade, and then senior year students can break out into three majors. There's also a summer opportunity that students are going to be involved in this summer. So two or more courses, it reads to a certification.
Thank you.
Any questions from members of the board, additional questions for staff on this item? Member Pauger?
I was interested in the Reader's Theater. Is that going to take the place of an other English class, or is that just an additional English class that will be available?
Yeah, actually, it is an elective, and I will let our curriculum coordinator, Ms. Becky Murphy, speak to that.
The Reader's Theater's class is an elective, and right now it was piloted last year at Burchell High School, and they've had great success with it, so that's why they brought it forward for approval.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, motion's on the floor, and let's vote. It's item H, once again, 12-141, New Courses, Career and Technical. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Pauger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes, unanimous. This takes us down to item I, 12-143, New Courses, Math. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to move course 12-143, New Courses in Math.
Is there a second? Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Pauger. We have a motion on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, questions from the board? Seeing none, comments from the board? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Pauger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. Motion passes unanimous. This takes us down to item J, 12-144, New Course, Reader's Theater.
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-144, New Course, Reader's Theater.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Cordero. We have a motion on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, questions from the board? Seeing none, comments from the board? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson? Oh, excuse me. Yes. Member Larson, sorry.
I don't have a question. Is this a vote or what?
Your mic is on. Do you have a comment
no,
or a question?
No, I do not have a comment. Thank you.
Okay. So, Member Larson, let's vote. Member Larson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. Unanimous. Takes us down to item K, 12-145, New Course Science Olympiad. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion to move 12-145, New Course Science Olympiad.
Second?
I'll second.
A motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Powger. We have an item on the floor. Any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, questions from the board? Seeing none, comments from the board? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item L, 12-146, Curriculum Framework Updates and Revisions. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-146, Curriculum Framework Updates and Revisions.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Powger. Motion's on the floor. Do we have members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, do we have questions from the board? Seeing none, do we have comments from the board? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item M, 12-147, New Curriculum Review Cycle. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-147, New Curriculum Review Cycle.
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Welton. Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on this item? Seeing none, are there questions from the board? Seeing none, are there comments from the board? Seeing none, let's vote. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. Unanimous. This takes us down to item N. Thank you. 12-149, resolution, signal lights at Cottonwood, Pioneer Peak, and Front Terrace. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-149.
Is there a second?
Resolutions.
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Cordero. We have a motion on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, Mr. Forrest and his team are here to answer any questions as needed.
Are there questions for members of the board? Member Welton.
Is this an unusual request? I've never seen a resolution come forward for signaling. Is this unusual, or is it done other places and we just have never done it?
The resolution is an attempt to correct an oversight on DOT's part. When they designed the new road systems, they left us out of the process. And in the process of their design, they also left out a proper signal light that would allow for safe transportation in and out of our school site. So we're asking them through this resolution to correct that situation.
Additional questions for members of the board? Comments from members of the board? Member Larson, you're... Okay, thanks. So we have an item on the floor, and I do want to cite a potential conflict. There is a possibility if in the future there's a road done, it may go through or maybe part of or adjacent to a piece of property from an individual that has supported me in my campaigns. So I ask the board if you wish me to abstain from voting on this item. Member Cordero? Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Poucher?
No.
Member Gaddis?
No.
Member Larson?
No.
Okay, I guess I vote on the item. So with that, we're going to vote. Member Larson?
Yes. Yes.
Member Gattis?
Yes.
Member Powager?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lisi?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. Thank you. This takes us down to item O, 12-155, FY13, CIP Authorization Resolution 12-022. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-155, Fiscal Year 13 Capital Improvements Authorization Resolution 12-022.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Powager. We have a motion on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Thank you, Mr. President. I've requested Mr. Ken Forrest, the Chief Business Officer, to present this item. It is in reference to the capital improvement projects for which our district can control ourselves. The list that he will present is a pretty extensive list requested by some of these requests came from APC boards, some of them from principals, other staff, and they're items for which our district may improve, and we would create a capital improvement budget in order to do this. Mr. Forrest can present at this time the list, and we will place it up on the screen. Thank you.
Members of the board, this year, this is part of the overall budget resolution. We start off with the CIP each year, starting with fiscal year 10-11, is established by board resolution. This is authorized in accordance with guidance from the state of Alaska. It is one-time monies only that are the result of unpredicted additional revenue or unanticipated expenditure savings within the general fund. I might add that the exact amount available to be transferred is not really determined until about 60 days after the close of the fiscal year, and that's as per Governmental Accounting Standards Board Rule 33, which says we must wait 60 days for subsequent events. And this is an optional category within the state chart of accounts. So last year, the board did authorize a capital improvement project fund. Of the funds the board authorized, we anticipate $1,520,243 will be left over on June 30th. Again, this is an estimate at this time. And then that, by statute, is allowed to carry over and be used next fiscal year. We are currently estimating, and when we do the actual budget presentation, I can show you where some of this money came from. But we're estimating that there may be up to $6,370,000 available. So we have put together this list. It's a prioritized list of projects. The priority is listed off to the left. And we start with the CIP or amount that we are recommending. And then we do a cumulative total. So on this slide, slide 24, you can see the charter school allocation to make them whole with regard to the legislative grants. So the legislative process, the blue book, if you will, we requested that the charter schools be made whole in accordance with the what the were promised at the election. As we know, the borough takes 5%. And so to make all of these schools whole, we're actually just asking for the 5% to give them the full amount that other schools will get from the bond. On the next page, we continue with the funding of playgrounds. You'll notice that there is a forward funding for Birch Tree. Birch Tree has requested that their allocation be forward funded so they may complete their playground project. We have checked with our attorney. This is legal. And so we are recommending that through these monies we forward fund and then they pay us back out of their allocation next year. That's what it amounts to. Then you can see we have a number of schools that start to come in with fairly high priority projects. You'll notice priority 1.8, for example, is the parking lot refresh. By utilizing these one-time monies, we'll be able to start a maintenance program, which we started last year, which will improve the life of the asphalt in all the parking lots. And so this is really designed to minimize the decay or alligator cracking, if you will, in the parking lots. And it'll also refresh the striping and curb painting, and in some cases the signage. The Fronteras School 1.91 is just an example of the capital improvement programs that can be set up for each charter school. They certainly are not getting $60,000 each. This will come from their leftover money. The highest amount requested is currently right at $60,000, and so we put that in. Then you can go through, and this is quite an extensive list. It is prioritized. Actually, if we keep going, you'll notice that on page 27, it ends up with almost $8 million. We have no anticipation of having that much money left over, but we thought we would provide the board with this prioritized list.
Thank you. Are there questions for members of the board for staff? Member Lacey.
Yes. As far as the playground equipment for our charter schools, let's say when Mr. Principal Schmidt moves to their new location, will anything that we put in that playground go with her? Is that?
Yes, sir, it will. Yeah, we're actually, this is one set of the playground equipment that we'll be able to control. The rest, the borough has elected to manage those projects. And I've installed multiple playground structures. And if you install them with the intent that they may be moved, then it's relatively easy to literally pick them up and move them to a new location.
Member Larson.
On these projects, as we had a project last year, were students assisted? Are any of these projects student assisted type projects? And who's going to actually, like, let's just take the playground equipment. Who's actually going to install those? Or is it a contractor that installs that, or do we install that?
It'll be a combination based on the design that the school would like to have. Some is self-installed. Much of it will be done by a certified contractor with regard to the OSHA requirements and the risk management side. But, for example, to answer your first question, we have kids hard at work right now on parking lot refresh. We're having a little difficulty with the rain, but we have kids working on parking lot refresh right now. So, and Dr. Paramo may want to speak to the number of kids that we've already hired this summer and put to work, and it is our intent that we start this program and continue it with students being hired to assist the facilities department. So one, it provides a life skill opportunity for the students. It extends their learning to more or less a job-related learning over the summer, but it also provides meaningful employment for the students. And last but not least, we found, as you can tell by the work the kids did in this room, that the kids do outstanding work when led correctly, and we are getting a lot of work done by these students on behalf of other students.
Member Gass, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. It had to do with Fronteras looking for a new site, and it kind of piggybacks on Member Lacey's comments. But for instance, does a charter school have the opportunity to use a portion of their money and still hold over the rest for maybe if they move to a more permanent place so that they can use the rest? Are they able to kind of keep it in a fund and not be penalized?
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Paramo, in a meeting with all the charter school principals, made that offer. Those are those $60,000 lines. Mm-hmm. So any funds they have remaining, they will be authorized to move into the capital improvement fund that they can hold. And once they hold those funds, they can use it in their existing facility, current year, future years. They could actually even use it because it is capital related to a lease purchase arrangement. So the answer is absolutely yes.
And remember, if they didn't use it, half the funds would lapse. And so this is a goal that they can improve their own facilities using money that was originally designated for education and the education of their students.
So what you're
So what you're saying is, though, I guess my question is, what if they don't use it? We know that Fronteras is looking for a permanent site. So if they don't use it, are you telling me that half still lapses?
No, ma'am. It would remain in their capital improvement project until use.
Okay. That's what I thought I heard. Thank you.
Member Pauger.
I was looking at 2.22 gym floor winter. There's quite a few of them. What does gym floor winter mean?
Yes, ma'am. Currently out of the facilities budget, historically the facilities department has been able to budget and provide for a resurface, of the gym floors once a year. By taking this one-time money, we'll be able to do it twice a year. So the fall sports will have a nice surface, and then over the winter break, we'll be able to resurface it, and the spring sports will have a good surface.
Member Larson.
On this capital money that goes into capital budget, it can never be moved out for anything else but capital improvement, regardless of the school, whether it be a charter or a neighborhood school. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is.
But it, like Ms. Gaddis pointed out, or you did, it can be carried on. If it wasn't all used for one reason or another this year, it can be carried into that same capital improvement, say, for that same specific use?
Yes, sir, it can. In fact, the resolution specifically authorizes the superintendent to move money from one project to the other because we're giving you a specific amount. But let's say that parking lot refresh, for example, comes in at less money, but you need money to assist on the gym floors.
Right.
The superintendent would be authorized to move those. It may not move to a non-capital project. The only exception to that would be another board-authorized fund. It would be possible to move some of those capital dollars into the employee self-insurance fund should that need arise, or should there be a determination that that be in the best interest of the district.
One quick follow-up. And all this money that's in these capital improvement pots of money and different schools are all fall under the same accounting principles from our administration and the same kind of audit, correct?
So it, absolutely.
So it makes sure it's utilized in the proper manner. Okay, thank you.
Member Cordero.
More than a question, it's a comment, and I don't mean to be disrespectful because I know that a lot of work goes into putting the list together, but I'm a little concerned that some items that are to benefit students, such as music instruments or student desks and furniture, have a lower priority than items like refreshing a parking lot. And that kind of concerns me that we should be prioritizing the needs of our students before we fix a parking lot. But that's just my opinion.
If I could comment on that, the items such as curriculum items like music and STEM and things like that, we did put a large portion of funds to already, and we have the needs in which the schools and those programs have requested for next year, we met this year. And so this would allow us funds that as they move forward, they can take, but there hasn't been a specific request. We've met the ones that were immediately requested in music, in PE, all the curriculum updates, the four areas that you saw, their requests were met. But we happen to believe that we should put some money there so that we can continue to spend on that. Had the judgment of the folks who worked on the curriculum may have been off a little bit, and they might find that they do need more music equipment. A big tuba costs about $7,000. So if a school were to request it, we would have a place to go.
Any additional questions? Comments? Thank you. So we have on the floor item O-12155 FY13 CIP authorization resolution 12-022. We're going to vote. Member Larson?
That's resolution 12-022, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Pauger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item P, 12-156 FY13 Budget Adoption Resolution 12-023. Is there a motion to move this item? Is there a motion to move this item?
I make a motion to move this item 12-156.
Is there a second? Thank you. Motion made by Member Larson, seconded by Member Welton. Motion's on the floor. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Yes, Mr. President. We do have a full-scale detailed report for you, and once this evening is finished, we will also place this on the website. This gives you a picture. Oh, actually, it's already on the website, so if you are home listening in your home, comfort of your home, you may pull this up on the website. This will answer all the details about where, why, where do the funds come from, where do they go. And this is the second part, truly, of that budget update, the first being how did the staffing fall out, if you will, amongst our schools, and what can we look forward to for positions. This gives the details of where those funds are located, with the, I guess, the end result of this being our final resolution to the borough about the school district's FY13 budget. Mr. Forrest.
If we can call up the PowerPoint, there we go. The general fund, which is the primary operating fund, is the first one we'll cover tonight. It is required by Alaska statute. There are some serious issues within the general fund. Future years could be exceptionally difficult, and we'll point out why that is the case in the next couple of slides. We've been having questions about why did we have to reduce staff, and why did we have to alter class scheduling? This next slide shows you an analysis. I might take a moment here to let the board know that we think we're going to get you monitors so that you'll be able to see what's these small. That's we're learning. We appreciate your patience as we learn how to use the room, and we'll get some monitors for you. So basically, you see on this slide, the top section of the slide says the 2011-2012 analysis structural deficit problem. What you see here, using 2007-2008 as the base year, why do we use that as the base year? That is the first year that the state of Alaska required school districts to include the on behalf of payment in the expenditure reporting. So we really need to be consistent and go from that year forward. Using that as the base year and going through 2008-2009 fiscal year to the 2011-12 fiscal year, you can see that on average, the average per pupil funding increase is 2.62%. But the average employee compensation cost increase was 5.29%. As you can see, that is the definition of a structural deficit. If your revenue is less, almost by half, of your expenditures just for this one category, then we have a long-term issue related to the ability of the district to remain solvent. To show you the impact of the supplemental entitlement program we did last year, you'll note that in 2011-2012, 5.92% of the total budget went to compensation. If we had not done the SERP, that number would have been 10.32%, and obviously unaffordable. And so therefore, that shows you what the board was able to accomplish by authorizing the SERP, taking approximately $7.6 million of ongoing annual expenditures out of the budget. That also, of course, resulted in larger class sizes and the need to reschedule. So that's in a nutshell, basically part of the structural deficit we have, and I think it clearly indicates a challenge for the future budget. In addition to that, this budget, the FY12-13 budget, contains approximately $8 million in one-time either savings, expenditure avoidance, or revenue. So you can see here that the governor's energy funds are one time. Now, we do believe that each year the state will provide some revenue, but there's no guarantee it will be at this level.
The NEA Health Trust 0% increase is an expenditure avoidance calculated to be worth $3.386 million this fiscal year. Air Force ROTC, a one-time legislative grant. Alaska Middle College School, a one-time legislative grant. The STEM, one-time legislative grant. And the Cyber Center legislative grant. Those total a slightly over $8 million, or the equivalent of 80 full-time equivalent positions. And so we're just saying to the board that in future years, we have a hill to climb already. As we look at the general fund, and again, I apologize for the size of this, you see we are presenting a balanced budget tonight. There are some things I would like to point out. The revenue, as you can see, is up 1.22%. Expenditures are up slightly above that, and we anticipate no difficulty with that this fiscal year. We, for our presentation, separate out the on behalf of. You'll notice it's shown as a revenue and an expense of equal amount. New to the presentation this year, and slightly larger than last year, is the Matsu Central allocation for the student allotments. We're moving that out because that is now being shown as a transfer to the school cash accounting system, so there's 100% visibility of those allotments for all the students at Matsu Central. So the result is you can see that we're up slightly in employee compensation, 2.8%. Benefits, thanks to the NEA Health Trust, are only up about 0.25%. And the non-employee costs are up dramatically. One might say, well, why are they going up so high? Well, part of it is these percentage increases are reflected in the change between estimated actual and budget. You'll notice down below in the estimated actual is that same number we had in the CIP project of $6,370,000. Well, most of that, as you can see, came from the non-personnel cost. And so you move roughly a little over half of the money saved in those non-personnel costs into the CIP. How is that accomplished? Very conservative. As we went through the school year, you may recall that we held a reserve in case we weren't funded in transportation. We held a reserve to fund part of the supplemental employee retirement system because we weren't sure that we would have enough in the previous fiscal year. And so because we're not allowed to have a fund balance and because we're not allowed to have year-end encumbrances, we must put internal reserves into the budget. The transportation fund is a perfect example. It would have been fiscally irresponsible, and I believe Member Gaddis asked me the question, do you have a way to pay this bill if we don't get the money? And the answer was, yes, we have put a reserve in the budget. That reserve moves down into this $6.3 million. The board may recall that Lucy Hope was very successful in her presentation of our intensive funding students and brought in $1.7 million additional dollars, unanticipated revenue. So it was a combination of fiscal conservatism, mid-year corrections, to expenditure accounts. For example, the superintendent has imposed since she became superintendent not a hiring freeze, but a hiring review. No personnel may be replaced even when they leave without the superintendent's signature. And we have not replaced a number of personnel. That accrues as savings into the CIP fund. Obviously, we're not showing those in the beginning budget. We're showing the zero for the CIP. And so that's why that looks large. We're showing the fund balance to be exactly the same because it is our anticipation that we will either move to the CIP or, as you'll see later, into the Employee Self-Insurance Fund, funds that are available within the general fund this year. And again, the same situation. We will not know the ending fund balance until approximately 60 days after the close of the fiscal year when the auditors certify that. So I'd like to take a pause here, and if the board has any questions, I'd be happy to answer regarding the general fund.
Member Larson.
Now, the 3.3 savings for the NEA trust fund this year, or for next year, is there going to be some sort of, what's the prediction for the increase for the following year, and will that 3.3 catch us in fiscal 2013-14? I mean, is that going to be an encumbrance that, an expenditure that's anticipated, but not be able to fund that on top of the increase for that year also?
Yeah, you could put the slide presentation back up, please. Shown on this page 15, is that cost avoidance of $3,386,000. So to answer your question, we have identified it as part of, some people would refer to it as a funding cliff. It is a known expenditure that must be addressed next year. So knowing that, I have every anticipation that the superintendent will continue the fiscal conservative management model she has employed, and that we will be looking at ways to provide reserves so that next year we don't have ongoing expenditures committed so we can't afford an increase. Do we have a prediction as to what the increase will be? We do not at the present time. We do know that when we went to the open market, we were approximately 4.5%, and previous years would put us in a similar situation. We have the unknown, however, of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision related to the Affordable Health Care Act and what impact that might have on rates in Alaska. And so right now we're anticipating that we could be looking at $4.3 million at a minimum that we need to fund next year for employee benefit increases.
To follow up, if I may, sir. So are you anticipating being able to put that amount of money into a health care reserve, not the regular reserve, but a health care reserve, so when fiscal budget 13-14 comes up, that money will be there? Is that a possibility of doing that?
What we have done in this budget, in conjunction with guidance from the superintendent, is to ensure that we have not committed ongoing expenditures in the FY 12-13 budget, so that of this 80 FTE, if you will, we have not covered all of the 80. And again, if I go back to that slide, we truly anticipate that the state of Alaska will fund some portion, if not in a similar fashion, the governor's energy funds. So that's about 29 FTE right there. Let's make it easy. Let's say 30 FTE. So that leaves 50 FTE worth of funding that we have to worry about. And that's if we get no other one-time funding. And the Alaska legislature has proven to be generous when the need is shown appropriately. And so at present, I don't anticipate having to meet the whole 80. However, we're attempting to build in the form of non-ongoing expenditures in this year's budget, the 12-13, sufficient money that you would not, as a board, be looking at having to deal with 80 FTE next year, having to literally on day one say, I'm going to have to lay off 80 people. What we're saying is you may have to reduce expenditures currently in the budget that are funded. You may have to cut in some instructional programs back. You may, or the discretionary part of those dollars, excuse me, the discretionary part of those dollars. You may have to reduce funding, for example, for some technology. You may have to cut back on your textbook expenditures. These are one-time expenditures, not recurring. And so we've taken a look at the budget, and we've said, how do we build the 12-13 budget to protect the district? We aren't able to do it 100%, but we feel that there is sufficient one-time expenditures in this budget that could smooth, if you will, the 13-14 budget, since we know we have, at a minimum, $3.4 million in employee benefits and probably a little more.
One other quick question to follow up. You talked about the CERT that we were able to save $5.5 million. However, that CERT, what we saved in that is going to catch up with us with increase of steps and so forth and so on. What do you predict that that will impact the upcoming budget?
Well, at the present time, obviously we begin negotiations for the 13-14 fiscal year. I believe November 1st is the first date we can begin those. As the board knows, we started with the classified personnel and suspended when Ms. Gardner took her leave.
I'm sorry, that's not what I'm really talking about. I'm talking about the high-end people retired out, and we hired anybody new. So as people move up in the high-end, when we did the CERT, that was projected that eventually over like a 5 or 6 year period, we would be back to the same kind of budget that those high-end people went out on. Now, is that going to affect your budget from year to year?
Not to the extent that you might think, because we did not hire 120 people.
Right.
So basically, we hired essential personnel back. That, of course, resulted in the increase in class size and some of the scheduling issues. But we did not hire that many back. As people progress through the schedule, it does have an impact. And, you know, we estimate that to be upwards of 2.5% annually, even without the COLA. The steps and columns are roughly 2.5%. I will point one other thing out on the general fund slide in a minute, but we don't think it's as dramatic as it has been thanks to the SERP. We also think that the board, in conjunction working with the employee groups, this data is pretty convincing, in my opinion, that the employee groups and the district need to work together to come to a conclusion that says we can't continue to have, on average, 2.7, 2.6% revenue increase and salary increases of 5.6. So, therefore, a restructuring which allows the ongoing expenditures for compensation to come down closer to the revenue is what's needed. And hopefully, working with our employee groups, there will be an acknowledgement that that's the only way the district will be able to move forward in a fiscally responsible manner.
And your utility increase and your commodity increase, what's that predicted for this upcoming year? Is it any substantial increase?
We use 10%. We're actually a little bit less because of some of the reduced expenditures, but we use 10% when we forecasted the budget.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to point out one last thing on this slide. When you see the difference between the 107 predicted and the 110 in salaries, you might question that. I just told you that we had about 2.5% built into the schedule for steps and columns, and yet we gave a 2% salary increase. So one would say, how can this only be 2.84%? I'm happy to report, and I would like to applaud the efforts of Charity Little Phillips, our budget analyst, who worked day and night to do this projection on Munis with the assistance of Terry Irwin, our CFO, Rebecca Wright, our new CFO, and with also help from Joyce Stein, our Director of Accounting. These projections are done for Munis, the new system. We think they're more accurate. So we're able to show you a much lower percent increase, which we also therefore predict you will not see as much savings at the end of the year. So one way to say that is we think the budget is much tighter and more accurate because of our new system. Its methodology for predicting expenditures for 83%+ of the expenditures for the budget utilizes a much more secure system whereby it literally looks at each employee and says, what will that employee cost and what are the benefits for that employee? Much more accurate than the previous system. So when you look at the benefit to the budget of doing this, literally, by purchasing Munis, you paid for it in 1 year because that money is plowed back into the instructional program. Moving on, pupil transportation. We've had a lot of discussion about pupil transportation fund. Again, this fund is required by the state of Alaska for those districts who are providing pupil transportation. Just some historical data for the board to look at, what the number of routes are, loaded miles per day, students that are traveling. In addition, this is the 2011-2012 cost for the contracts. As you know, we use three contractors currently. Shows you the number of routes and the daily trip cost per student. So what is the budget for next year? You'll notice that we are utilizing some of the ending fund balance is what it amounts to when you look through here. But we will make it. We will not need a subsidy next year. That is our current prediction. However, we will need to revisit transportation funding at the state level. The last-minute changes change that methodology from actual reimbursement, again, to a methodology of per student. But the cost escalator does not match what the contract provisions for every single provider in the state say, and that is they use the Anchorage CPI. And the cost increase, if you will, in the statute is only half of that, or predicted to be only half. Therefore, we will need more money for the 13-14, or we'll be having a subsidy from the general fund.
Question. On the page 19, you have a eligible students for first student would be 16,467. Average number of students, 8,197. So the bus capacity is for 16,647. So the help me out with the...
The bus capacity is rated to the average number of riders.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Food service. Again, this fund is required by Alaska statute, and we're happy to report that in part, thanks to Representative Stoltz and the in-state produce and commodity subsidy, that we are not anticipating the need to subsidize food service in the upcoming fiscal year. And so we're showing a balanced budget for food service with no subsidy from the general fund. We've gone over the CIP, so I'll go through that quickly. The next fund is the Bond and Legislative Grants Fund. And the board may note that there are a number of funds you've not seen before. We felt that it was appropriate that we start showing you all the funds that you truly are accountable for. And so we're trying to be a little bit more full disclosure, show you all these rather than the big three. So you can see these funds. The big one here is the legislative grant carryover. So in previous years, we received grants from the legislature. We still have $4,909,000 left in projects to complete. Some of those are ongoing this summer. A lot of the carpeting and the roofs are part of that $4,909,000. Fiscal year 2012-13 legislative grants, you may recall that we received $5,159,500. However, we know that $2 million of that is for an addition to Academy Charter that will not come to the district. It will go straight to the borough and then to Academy Charter. So we don't show that. The known designated special purpose grants we'll show you in a minute. We have the detail for. And then the pending grants is grants that we anticipate up to this much more money coming into the district during the fiscal year. So we start off and show you the direct federal totals on the grants. The next page is just the beginning of and lists all of the grants that we have currently in progress. You can see fiscal year 11, fiscal year 12, predicted fiscal year 13. And you can see that these are the federal through the state grants. And so you can see that with the ARRA funds that the superintendent mentioned earlier, you can see just what how FY11, we were at $24 million. It dropped this year to $12 million, half of what we had. It is expected to go up slightly next year.
Was the possibility of more cuts from the federal government taken into account, at least those cuts that may be triggered by laws that have been passed here in the near or the recent past?
Yes, sir, it has been. And then last but not least, we show you the other local state, and then other state, direct state, and so you can see the totals from an actual total in 2011 of $26.6 million to an actual total in the current fiscal year estimated to be $13.8 million. And next year, an actual very small increase due to certain specific grants of about $14.6 million. But as Mr. Dunleavy has pointed out, there are some grants that will be going away. And while they may not go away completely in fiscal year 14, we would expect these to go down more.
Will the mandates attached to those grants disappear with the funding, or not necessarily so?
Some will, most won't.
So we have to pick up the funding. We have to backfill through whatever. Next question is, Eielson, there's serious talk that it's going to close, move to Anchorage. Are we doing any type of study, projection, whatever, to anticipate an inflow of students? And what is the timeline for that, for those students to hit the valley, if it does occur in the manner that we think it may?
Actually, the superintendent has spoken to a number of people. We're trying to track it. The borough is actually assisting us in tracking this. So we are aware. Most people have heard that Fairbanks would close three schools almost immediately if that fighter wing is transferred to J-Bear. It would take some time for that to occur, even though some of the aircraft may already be in transit. We do have Senator Begich is asking for a delay and a review of the decision, so we're keeping our eye on that. We did have a request to move modulars. The board may recall we presented to you moving some modulars as part of the emergency plan the governor has requested over to the fairgrounds. We indicated to that group we're going to hold on that until we hear what's going on with these base realignments, because obviously there would be very short notice, there would be no way to get schools built, we'll need the modulars. So we're keeping a very close eye on that.
Quick question. Knowing that this may happen, are we working with our federal delegation in terms of some type of unprecedented funding, because we are going to have to carry the burden? Is there something attached to the closure that helps where these individuals are being relocated?
There is federal legislation, impact aid legislation. Currently, we're well below the target. However, Travis Unified School District had a special legislative provision written in for just that district to accommodate a similar situation. Should this situation progress, it would be my recommendation to the superintendent and the board that we work with our lobbyists to see if our delegation could not put in a provision similar to what Travis had as a 1 to 3 year transition funding to help the district. Part of that funding for Travis Unified built them 2 elementary schools. And so those are the types of things that we can look at once we know this is progressing.
Member Larson.
The unfunded mandates on grants that we're going to lose, and the mandates are unfunded or will be increasing. Is there any possibility, I'm sure, that we can track those and have those for future reference when we do lobby our state and federal delegation to show the cost burden on the district and how much and so forth and so on as the grants fall down?
Absolutely, Mr. Larson. We'll be doing this. And remember, the board did pass a resolution to that effect with the NCLB regulations. Tied within NCLB are the, I talked about 6B, we talk about 2A, all those grants that provide us additional programs and people. And a lot of the reductions that you saw in classified, it's already happening. The funds are being reduced. Last year, again, it was almost a quarter of the amount of money. This year, it's a little bit less than 10%. However, the ESEA statute, if you will, and requests and mandates have not changed. It's just that the funds have been reduced. Our state, as well as our board sent a resolution. The state now is looking at receiving a waiver from some of the NCLB provisions as well.
Just one last question on that. As those grants go away and we reduce staff, does that affect our student performance, and is that being tracked?
We do track our student performance quite heavily, and we'll take a look at this major reduction. The reductions we had last time, a lot of it was in capital monies or capital things like computers and curriculum. We are moving into people now, and those assets, those human assets, and it's closed very trackly, and that's actually consequently part of NCLB, so the federal government would have those data as well as our states.
Back to the presentation, please. Enterprise funds. While this isn't a significant amount of money, we think it's important to point out that we do have some enterprise funds within the school district. And you'll note that one of the examples that actually the state uses is the resale house construction project. And obviously we've had those recently. So you can see some of these. And they're, of course, tracked and reported on, and as Mr. Larson pointed out, they are audited. Internal service funds. Our biggest one is our workers' compensation fund. What is an internal service fund? Well, basically, you take the money, we collect those funds through our payroll system, we move that money to this internal service fund where those expenditures are tracked, and you can see our workers' compensation estimates for next year. Fund 652 is the employee benefit fund that we talked about, the board established, and this year we will be establishing that fund based upon the resolution passed by the board. We're putting $100 per participant into the fund at a minimum. That may change based on the financial condition at the end of this fiscal year. We don't anticipate any expenditures next year out of this fund. But this would be the fund Mr. Larson referred to that the board can start to build a reserve to smooth the impact of escalating health benefit costs. Trust and agency fund. This fund is the school activities fund. These funds, as you know, are accounted for in the school cash accounting system. That's worked very well. Full visibility, which was not available before, is now available for all funds flowing through there. The superintendent reviewed the report, and she found four schools she considered worthy of investigation and following up on those through the appropriate channels. So a good example of how moving to that hopefully will forestall some of the issues you've seen for other districts where people are misappropriating funds. We think it's an outstanding system, and the parents appear to appreciate the benefits of that system. So last but not least, you all were provided with this document. It is the formal budget resolution. Yours looks a little bit different. This is formatted for the slide. But as you can see, the board is anticipating total revenues for the funds you control of about $285,753,000, and expenditures will be less than that, of about $284,994,000. So there will be some funds that have carryover. We are asking that the board president and the superintendent sign this, and then we will forward that to the borough as per the change in board policy.
I've got a comment that I just have to share. You, three or four pages back, we talked about losing federal grants but maintaining the mandates. I would strongly suggest that in our retreat, what you said is a significant issue that I think a lot of folks don't realize. So you take the money, and we have for years and years and years, because there was money to take and there was continual increases in funding. And that has changed as a result, I think, of 2 years ago with the budget discussions and the committees that were formed at the federal level to start to trigger automatic cuts unless there was agreement by Congress. Well, Congress hasn't had a budget in years. The point I'm trying to make is I would caution the school district, to really scrutinize any potential grants that we take on from this point forward, because if we have to continue with those mandates and there's no funding, basically what we're going to do is cannibalize the program to meet those mandates. And so it's somewhat of a beware of Greeks bearing gifts, and that's where we find ourselves now. So we've handed over portions of control of our program to the federal government in return for money. Now the money's gone, they retain control over our program, and they're going to insist that we pay for it out of our local funds. And I think that's problematic. Any questions, comments? Thank you very much.
I would point out that there is a resolution before you. In accordance with your own board policy, we do need you to pass that resolution so that we can send that to the borough.
Thank you. So we have an item on the floor. It's been seconded. Are there any questions of staff? Any comments? Okay, with that, we're voting on a resolution. Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Gaddis.
Yes.
Member Powder.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Cordero.
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. I'm going to just ask for just a brief 5 minutes. We're back in session. This takes us to item 10, future items, future business, June 25th and 26th, 2012, 5:30 p.m., school board retreat, MSB Central Office, boardroom right here, August 1st, 2012, 6 p.m., regular school board meeting, MSBSD Central Office, here again, and meeting on August 15th, 2012, 6 p.m., here as well. I'm assuming all of our meetings will be here from now on unless we specially schedule meetings at the various sites. Are there any other future items that we may be missing? Seeing none, this takes us down to item 11, last person to be heard on non-agenda items. Again, the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. Speakers limit to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any school board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. Maximum of 1 hour per meeting. This is our last 30-minute segment. Is there anyone that would like to come before the board and speak on non-agenda items? Seeing none, this takes us down to item 12, correspondence board committee reports. Do we have any board committee reports? I don't believe so. Oh, excuse me. Member Gaddis?
I do have school site selection report. I want to report that we're struggling with finding a KGB middle high school site, so we've pretty much decided, and we're looking at combining a elementary, middle, and high all on the same property. It's a pretty large property, and we're working through that process. So we've got that. South Palmer High School, we thought we had a site. We were moving along with that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You said high school, it's an L.
I said elementary, middle, and high is what I said.
South Palmer, you said high school.
I apologize, I didn't know where. Okay. South Palmer Elementary School. There we go. We had a site chosen for South Palmer Elementary School, and we were moving along. It was my understanding that the borough was ready to acquire it. Our last site selection, Farmland Trust came in and looked at the fact that we were purchasing or looking at purchasing farmland and asked for us to relook at some other property. The seller does not want to farm it and would like to sell it to the school district, but we as a school district or site selection are going to look at other properties and come back to the table. So that's pretty much the report for the school site selection.
Thank you. Member Larson.
I'll ask the question. I'll ask the question of the sites selection committee. That was what I read in the paper where it said something about the farmland versus schools on. Was that an ordinance that was passed by the borough, I believe? Or was that just an article in the paper that I read that talked about the school site selection or schools not being put on farmland? Is that where that's coming from?
I admit to not knowing. I do read the paper, but I didn't read that part in the paper. So we did not pass a resolution at the site selection. So if the Mat-Su borough did, I'm not aware of it. And what was that? Today's Wednesday. It would have been yesterday if there was a borough meeting. I'm not aware of it.
Thank you. Any other committee reports? Any correspondence? This takes us down to item 13, comments from school board and administration. Dr. Perarmo, staff.
Mr. Forrest. Mr. Stone. Thank you very much. I want to say that this meeting completes my last board meeting of my first year as your superintendent, and I have certainly enjoyed the challenge and the process, the kids, the people. It's all added up to great fun and great achievements, and I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Member Larson.
My board comment is on the Board Connect section 2. It talked about our meeting room here being used by the borough assembly, and if we could get a little bit more information on that, I would be interested, maybe through our Board Connect. Does that mean that every one of their borough meetings will be held here in their committee meetings and so forth and so on? Or is that appropriate to ask now?
Through the President, to Mr. Larson, at this point in time, they do have construction of a new assembly chamber boardroom themselves, if you will, or assembly chamber room. And during that time, we are assisting them in space and space available for all of their meetings for FY13. However, district priority does come first. But so yes and no. This year, it is a yes. All their meetings that we can assist with, we will. But moving into the future, they are having an addition built with offices and their new assembly chambers. But I can further give information in the Board Connect with dates and calendared items. Thank you.
My remaining comment is I really appreciate the total transparency of our budget from the past and for future. It makes it very easy to look at things like cliffs and look at sustainable budgets, and I really appreciate that a lot. And I appreciate all the work that's been done on like this Board Connect and keeping the information flowing to the board members so we can make decisions. My hat goes off to you and your staff for that. Thank you.
Member Gaddis.
No comment.
Member Pauger.
I do want to second Mr. Larson's comments on the budget. I really appreciate the transparency, the updates, the continuous updates on our budgeting. It's been very, very helpful. Also, I again want to thank the students who worked on this great room, and also the staff that's working so hard to make sure they work out all the little bugs with this new room. I think it's wonderful.
Member Welting.
I want to say I went to Rochelle High summer graduation. They were able to graduate 18 more students in the 3 weeks between the other graduation and Friday, and it was a wonderful celebration, and just goes to show what we can do when we really invest in our students and invest in the education process. Also, this morning I was at the Justice Coalition. I thank Mr. Vervelo for attending and helping discuss some of the issues that we have with youth and suspensions and things that go on. The community members who were there really appreciated having that knowledge. And again, anybody else can come to these meetings. They're at 7:30 in the morning on the third Wednesday of each month at the Windbreak. I just appreciate that we have the time next Monday and Tuesday for our board retreat, and so that we can really examine what we've done, what has, what needs to be done, and how we're going to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Lacey.
Yes, I would like to thank the superintendent for having that sign moved down the street there for me. And on the second note, I would like to extend an invitation to all of the constituents out in Radio Land to be a part and see how our school board retreat works next week, Monday and Tuesday. So please come.
Thank you. Member Cordero.
Thank you. I've been talking to a lot of parents, and there's a lot of excitement in the community about the new opportunity to have dual credit with the college and high school credits. So I have to say that thank you for working on that so hard and for making it happen, because it'll be really good for the students, and it's a great opportunity.
Thank you. We're not a perfect school district, but we're one of the best. And that's a tribute to the staff, hardworking teachers, classified folks, administration that's before us, and others that aren't here right now. It'll be almost a year in early July when Dr. Burnley passed away suddenly. It was an unprecedented incident that, thank God, rarely happens, but it happened. And I want to thank the staff, all of the staff members. I want to thank Dr. Perarmo for helping the school district get through that time period. As you see now, we're here at the end of the year. We have not just a functioning school district, but we have a very good school district. We didn't fall apart. We kept moving forward with the initiatives that we began under Dr. Burnley. And Dr. Perarmo will put her stamp on the school district as time goes on, but I think we're headed in the right direction. We've got hardworking people. We're very fortunate. And I want to thank Dr. Perarmo and her staff, and I want to wish everyone a safe, relaxing summer with a few warm and non-rainy days. So with that, we recessed out of executive session. We have unfinished business. We're going to recess back, or we're going to gavel off for 5 minutes and go back into executive session. So when we come back out, we'll adjourn. So thank you.